Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 3rd, 2000. In the fireside room tonight, we have a forum presented by the Forest Service entitled Portal to the Future, Mining Our Own Business. It's about the Holden Mine and what the Forest Service is learning about it as they're studying it and preparing to close it up for good. The title number, or the session number of this forum is FO2017. Let's listen in.
And welcome to tonight's forum. This is an exciting time for Holden Village. The groundwork is being laid right now for the biggest construction project this valley has seen since the mill structure and town site were built in the 1930s. But this time, the purpose is to correct past mistakes and to mitigate continuing environmental damage occurring in this valley. Many agencies, companies, and people are working together to make this happen. There's the United States Forest Service, there's the Washington State Department of Ecology, there's the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, there's the URS Company, formerly Dames & Moore, there's the Intelco Company, formerly Alumet, formerly Howe Sound, and Atlas Faucet Mining Company, formerly Faucet Contracting, and Holden Village, still Holden Village. Holden Village is a partner in this effort. Not only do we live and gather in this former mining town, we all benefit from the products other mines than this mine have produced. As consumers and stewards of this valley, we need to take responsibility for its cleanup. It's our desire to cooperate and support this work. It's our work also. I'd like to thank tonight's panel for coming this evening and welcome them to Holden Village. Norm Day is with the United States Forest Service as the project manager for the cleanup effort. Jennifer Dieters of URS Environmental Engineers is the site manager for the project, and Dick Clark, also from URS Environmental Engineers, is the construction manager. Now, we had hoped that Atlas Faucet would make it here this evening, although they got up at 4 o'clock, as they do every morning, and work 80 hours a week, 10 hours a day, and they also had a barge to load tonight, so unfortunately they weren't able to make it. But if you see Leroy, Al, Joe, Rick, or Frank, say hello to them and thank them for coming and doing this work. We're going to spend most of the time this evening in questions and answers and discussion. We'll start with just a couple of words from Norm and Jennifer about what their roles are here and a little bit about the background of the project. And then Norm has a little bit of video, which was shot over the last 2 days, of what they're doing right now up at the portal. And then we'll open it up for discussion. So, Norm Day.
Thank you. Thank you, Christopher. Actually, maybe more than just a few words, but anyway. I'd sort of like to welcome everyone here and to the first of many forums the rest of this summer on this project. So, welcome. I know many of you know a lot about the history of the Holden Mine and the past reclamation efforts that the Forest Service did on the site about 10 years ago with the gravel and the revegetation. And some of you are even familiar with the current scope and status of the cleanup action at the mine today. While others of you may know just a little bit about the mine history and how Holden Village came into existence, I thought for those of you who don't know much about the Holden Mine or the status of the project, I'd give you a little bit of background information. And for those of you that already know this, just bear with me for about 5 minutes or so and kind of bring everybody up to speed who may not be familiar. Howe Sound Mining Company operated the Holden Mine from 1937 to 1957, and during that time they removed about $70 million worth of copper, zinc, and with lesser amounts of gold from the mine. During the operation, about 57 miles of underground workings were put in, and about 8.5 million tons of tailings were disposed on the surface here in Railroad Creek, covering about 90 acres. After the mining operation shut down, the mining interests were deeded to the Lutheran Bible Institute, and then Holden Village was incorporated in 1962, and as you know, has been operating very successfully ever since. During the late 1980s and the early 1990s, the Forest Service did an interim action at the site, and that's when we installed some riprap along the toe of the tailings piles for stability and prevent creek erosion. We put gravel on a gravel cap on the top of the tailings piles to cut down on the dust that was generated here before, and it also facilitated revegetation of the surfaces of the tailings. We also did some work with recontouring and putting some drainage ditches in on the top of the tailings pile to take water off of the tailings from the snowmelt. The interim action that we took back then significantly improved site conditions, at least from the standpoint of dust generation, and it started the revegetation effort, and it's prevented the tailings bin from being eroded by Railroad Creek, but there are still some fairly significant environmental concerns that have not been addressed by the previous actions. Most seriously is the contamination of the groundwater from seeps underneath the tailings and from water coming out of the mine that contains is somewhat acidic and contains heavy metals. In the early 1997, the Forest Service, Environmental Protection Agency, and the Washington Department of Ecology began fairly serious discussions with Intalco, who is the successor to the House Island Mining Company, about initiating a detailed study of the Holden Mine and the impacts related to the mining. This was going to be done under the Superfund, under the authority of the Superfund Act, or CERCLA, for those of you that like acronyms. In April of 1998, the Forest Service, EPA, and Washington Department of Ecology reached agreement with Intalco about the scope of this cleanup study and other factors in the detailed study or remedial investigation feasibility study of cleanup. At this time, the Forest Service is the lead agency directing the cleanup action, with EPA and Ecology cooperating with us. Intalco has URS, formerly Danes & Moore, as their lead consultant for this project. And in addition to the study of the cleanup of the mine itself, as one phase of the project, we're also looking at natural resource, the damages to natural resources in the as a result of the mine, and how we might be able to restore those resources as part of the cleanup action. Over the past 2.5 years, Intalco and Danes & Moore, or URS, have collected extensive environmental information related to the mine and the environmental setting here that will help in the decisions that lay ahead on what sort of cleanup remedy will be best for this mine in the future. And at the current time, we're thinking that if we stay on somewhat of an aggressive schedule, there is a possibility that construction of the cleanup remedy for this site could begin in 2002. Although I just want to leave you with a word that is somewhat conservative, and there are a lot of things that could perhaps delay that schedule a little bit. We are currently in the early stages of the feasibility study that will analyze the various technologies and options for cleaning up the contaminated area. And we haven't even developed any alternatives yet. We're still in the early stages of that. As part of the feasibility study, Intalco has agreed to reopen or re-enter the 1500 level of the mine for purposes of gathering additional information and samples that may help us in selecting a remedy for the site. And so that's Jennifer may want to add a little bit more as to the purpose of the mine entry, but generally it's to help us in the feasibility study. And with that, I guess I'll turn it over, and in a little bit we'll show you some video of what's going on up there. Thank you.
Well, Norm has done a pretty good job of summarizing, I guess, what work has been done to date at the site. Both Dick and I work for URS, and I've been involved in this project since 1997 when we started collecting data as part of what's called a remedial investigation. And basically, we collected a lot of soil, water samples, groundwater samples. We did a lot of observational type recording to try to figure out what are the environmental impacts that have resulted from this mine being developed at this site. And since 1997, we've been collecting additional data and analyzing that data and trying to come up with some focused issues that we can try to address through different types of remedial actions. So as Norm indicated, this project where we're going to actually go up to the mine portal, the main portal into the mine, and reopen it is part of that investigation to try to obtain a little bit more data so we can develop some alternatives to try to address some of the issues related to the mine itself and the drainage that comes from the mine. The project that's going on right now by the portal is to reopen this portal and reestablish safe entry into the tunnel that goes back almost a mile of tunnel. It goes back into the mine and comes back out at another portal that's called a ventilator shaft. And the purpose of reopening this tunnel and this shaft are to take a look at some of the issues related to the water that's draining out of the mine. And some of you have probably walked up there and seen the portal drainage that's currently flowing down a ditch that runs alongside the road. And as Norm stated, that drainage has some high concentrations of different types of metals that are particularly toxic to aquatic life. So that's one of the issues at this site that we need to address. And in order to take a look at that, we want to reopen the portal, take a team of people inside there to look at various aspects of the tunnel itself. A couple of things we'll be looking at are the chemistry of the mine as far as the different geochemical processes that are occurring along the walls of the tunnels and the big open stopes that are underground that result from the kind of rich ore body oxidizing, and it produces what's called a salt. And when that washes off, it ends up leaching some metals into the water that then drain from the mine. So that's one of the things we're going to be looking at. And other things we're going to be investigating up there are how competent is that tunnel? Could we potentially place a bulkhead in the tunnel to regulate the flow of water coming out of the mine for treatment purposes? We'll also be looking at various sources of water that come into the mine to see if we can segregate water that's maybe lower in metal concentrations than water that's higher to kind of reduce the overall volume of impacted water. So there's several things we want to look at in there, but before we can do that, we need to reestablish safe access into the portal. And that's what Atlas Faucet is doing for us up at the portal right now. And what's happened is the first approximately 75 to 80 feet or so, we think, of the tunnel has collapsed. And the reason for that is because the mountainside is partially hard rock and part of its soil and kind of unconsolidated materials. And they had to establish a portal, an entrance into that hard rock through some of this soil and looser material. And over the years, the timbers that they used to construct that portal have collapsed. And the portal itself has collapsed, and we can no longer enter it. So they're going in and they're trying to safely reopen the mine so we can get in there. And one of the issues they're dealing with right now is there is some water that's draining out of the mine, but behind that collapsed section, there's potentially a pool of water that could have backed up in back of that section of soil. And so in order for them to be able to excavate back, they need to drain that pooled water down, if it's there, so that they can safely excavate without releasing a lot of water as they're excavating. And what we're going to do during construction is we're going to divert the water from where it goes now, which is the drainage kind of flows from the portal, and it flows down in a fairly direct path to Railroad Creek. But during construction, because we're going to be in there mucking around and stirring up a lot of soil and silt, we're going to direct the water down to what's kind of commonly called the lagoon area, but it's an old settling pond that's located down near the vehicle bridge. And we're going to use that to try to give the water some detention time and let the solid particles settle out before it discharges to Railroad Creek. And we'll also be doing some testing here on site. We're going to set up a little lab area in one of the old maintenance buildings to test for metals and total suspended solids, so we can try to ensure that the water that's entering the creek is no worse quality than what's entering right now. So that's kind of the scope of the project for this summer. And I guess with that, Norm has some video of what Atlas Faucet has been doing over the past couple days. And what they've been trying to do is they call it a slusher, and I think you'll see it on Norm's video, and he can explain it a little bit better, but they're trying to excavate down in back of the collapsed section of the portal to see if we can access that water, that pooled water back there, and try to drain it off. So it's in the early stages, but it's interesting how they're approaching it.
Yeah, I'll need someone to, can you turn the camera on while you're over there, Christopher?
Okay.
I have to apologize before I start showing the video. I'm not a professional photographer. It's a new video camera for me, and this is unedited video. I haven't had a chance to edit out some of the stuff that I will hopefully for later forums. I can produce a much better tape that just shows you what I want to show. I've got some, it's in the back. You just turn the lever to VCR. You got to push and then in with your finger and then turn it up.
It's round out here, Norm? Oh, I see on the side. Somebody get the lights.
I can't see it. Okay, this is the portal as it looked Monday. Inside there is a weir you see the water draining through that notched board. That weir was put in there so they could. Is there some way we can change the picture? It's not the focus so much, but the size of the picture with your.
You want it smaller or larger?
Yeah, smaller.
The front really is
no, on your.
Twist the front one.
The lens itself.
Yeah. Twist it. They push it in.
Whoops.
I don't know of any way to do that. No.
Okay, well. I'll put it on pause here.
It's working.
Whoops.
We can live with it.
You sure?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, well anyway, you're getting more of a picture than you. Pictures will. You're looking up above the portal now in the area that's timbered right now where they're going to be removing from some vegetation so they can use the slusher. It's just a shot from the in front of the portal looking at the waste rock, surface of the waste rock dump in Upper Over Creek. And I had to do a little bit of scenery shooting on that. I'm going to have to learn how to become less jerky and slower in my movements, but yeah.
What's so weird?
What's a weir?
That was the little like dam that had the notch in it so that they can determine the volume of water that flows through that notch. Here the workers are cutting through some of the rail that the ore came out on like a train out of the mine. That's the drainage currently going down along the side of the road, the mine drainage.
How many gallons?
I'm not sure the gallons, but the flow rate now is about a half a cubic foot per second.
It's about 200 gallons per minute,
okay.
Roughly.
There's a, you can see a little better shot of the pool water dammed up behind there, what the current timbers look like. They're pretty rotten, they've collapsed, and you can see water's flowing down over the collapsed debris in the back.
The old rail
line that was going into the
portal so they could get their truck around there and move it. So they're kind of sawing that rail.
Well, here we go again. Rick, do you want to talk about the geology of the whole thing? This was on Monday, I think, or Tuesday, when we had all that haze in here, that smoke from the fires down by Yakima.
How far up the mountain will the caster take out the vegetation?
You'll see when we get just a little bit further.
We'll have to go about 80 feet back. Straight back, like plan view, which given the angle of that slope will be probably a little over 100 feet up. But the actual width is pretty narrow right now, as you'll see in a minute.
Do you have all the heavy equipment that you need, or you'll be barging more in?
It depends on how this approach works that they're taking right now. We're hoping that we'll have a little bobcat coming up tomorrow, but other than that, we don't have any other big equipment planned right now.
What's going to happen with the structure of the mine? That part that we're going
to see the...
Not determined yet. Right now, we are going to put a fence around that structure this construction season to try to prevent curious people from kind of wandering in, because it isn't a very safe structure, but it's a big undertaking to try to remove that structure. So right now it's going to be replaced.
Is there a plan to use the tailings?
Yeah, there'll be several options that'll be reviewed during the feasibility study stage of the project to address the issues related to the tailings, which include the stability issues and the kind of chemical issues.
That's related to the mill.
When the mine was originally permitted, what was the condition for at the end of the project for what was going to be done with the facilities, the mine facilities that we just saw?
I think at the time that the mine was actually operating, they were complying with the regulations of the time, and actually had a very good milling process, but there were no provisions made back then for what would be done with the structures and stuff when they left. I think even when they left, they probably weren't completely sure that would be reopened in mind.
You see here now they've cleared the timber above the portal, and they got a slusher. The dirt up there, you'll see it operate, but that...
Is this today, Norm?
Yeah. Right up in here, you can see the...
Yeah.
I should have brought my laser pointer.
There's a hole.
You see the cables?
Yeah.
On the operator there, there's a bucket on the end of the cables there that
You can see the bucket kind of moving down the slope here as they're kind of ripping the soil. Nice shot.
Yeah, the picture is taking up too much of the screen. So I mean, if there's two, we can't change that.
Sounds good.
Now there's nobody up there. All that's being done by the operator on this slusher.
Yeah, there's a pulley on the upslope end that the cable wraps around, and he kind of controls the direction of the cable up and down.
Got in behind. See the top of the caved area? We're still not into the mine itself. That's all part of the caved area. Mm-hmm. You're looking at glacial till plastered up against the rock.
Yeah, as the soils below this area collapsed, it left this, they call it a ballroom, but it left this cavern where the root mass and the vegetation are holding that upper till up above, and the rest of the soil has collapsed below it.
That's looking down. There are the stack of some of the mine timbers they're going to use as they get into the mine.
What's the chemical composition of the tailings?
The tailings?
Mm-hmm.
Tailings are basically ground up rock, very fine, so it's like a sand. And it's been processed, so a lot of the copper and zinc and silver and gold have been removed. And what's left is really high in iron, especially, which is what gives it its orange color.
That's a pump they're using to keep the dust down, to spray water on the dump to keep the dust down, and also for case of fire.
What makes the brick white when on the sediment on the rock?
That's aluminum precipitate. And what's interesting is that the composition of the water that leaves the portal actually changes throughout the year. In the spring, when there's a lot more water coming in, and a lot more water kind of flowing around the sides of the rock tunnels and big open areas in the mine, the water has a little bit lower pH. And because of that, you don't see the white precipitate in the spring. But as it moves into fall and that water volume decreases, the pH of the water actually increases a little bit. It becomes closer to neutral. And aluminum will precipitate at neutral, you know, drinking water type pH. So you see a lot of white precipitate in the bed in the fall and winter.
I was going to fast forward through some of this. I was just taking video of the drainage ditch that's where the water will.
That's the path behind the kites.
Except I can't find Feist. Fast forward in the dark, so you're just going to put up with it.
And this is the current drainage.
Used in the processing?
I didn't hear.
What was the question?
Were there any chemicals used in the processing of the material when it came out of the mine?
Throughout the life of the mine, they use different types of chemicals.
Right here, excuse me, Jennifer, right here is where that stream will be diverted across the road in a culvert, and then it will run down the ditch on the other side and eventually run into the settling pond.
Is there fog sitting in the mine?
I'm sorry, Jennifer.
Oh, that's great.
I just wanted to...
A common chemical, I guess, if you will, it was used as a pine oil, very common additive used in the flotation process to try to separate some of the desirable metals from the rest of the rock and composition of the ore.
When did the water start to pour out of the mine like that?
When they stopped operating, the mine filled up. So what happens is the groundwater in this area is naturally at a certain level in the ground. And while they were mining, they would dig down. You know, they dug from this level, they dug both down and they blasted up. So when they stopped mining, they stopped pumping the water. Because during mining operations, they'd have to dewater these lower tunnels and stopes so that they could work in there. because naturally they just fill up with water, the natural groundwater flow. So when they stop mining, it slowly filled until it started, discharging from the portal.
Here the operator is working on the lagoon area, getting ready to install some geotextile fabric and then put some riprap on it to slow the velocity of the water down as it enters the settling pond.
We'd like to call it a settling pond. Lagoon area sounds so good. This pond was already there. We're not going to do a lot of work to it except to give an overflow to the pond so it can discharge to Railroad Creek, and to add some rock and some geotextile fabric in the entrance to the pond to try to slow down the water velocity as it enters the pond so we get better settling of particles.
We can turn the lights on. The rest of that was just showing some more shots of the ditch, which not very exciting, except for maybe when water starts flowing down it.
Have there been other mines that you've worked with that have had similar issues, and what has been the action taken there?
Addressing. I've been around a lot of mines with similar problems, and I'm working on another mine in Oregon that's got some of the problems, but there were two uranium mines, so you're dealing with basically different types of minerals, but they both had sulfides, and they both produced acid drainage that we had to deal with.
Why don't we raise hands, and who's next? Yes.
Is there bauxite in the mine?
Pardon me?
Bauxite.
Bauxite?
Yeah, bauxite. Yeah. Where does that aluminum come from?
Well, there's aluminum silicates. The rocks themselves are volcanics and metamorphics, and they have aluminum silicates in them, the feldspars and other aluminum silicate minerals.
Yeah.
I heard your record 30 years ago. That's been a long time. As a kid. At that time, there was Kennecott Hot Copper was contemplating suing Holden Village to get this pile of tailings to reprocess it. Thought there was more copper left in it. What ever happened to that lawsuit or that controversy?
I'm not sure what happened to that lawsuit, but I do know that we've had some economic studies done on the prospect of reprocessing the tailings, and two separate groups have looked at that and have not found that at this point in time, with the price of copper where it is and the other metals that may be in the tailings, that it wouldn't be economically feasible to reprocess those tails right now.
There's some chairs back here, and there's more chairs over here.
In addition to the fact that it's not economical now, the Forest Service has also started the process to withdraw this area around Holden Mine from mineral entry. It's already segregated from mineral entry, while the process takes about a 2-year process to complete, but right now no one can locate mining claims in this area. And once the withdrawal is complete, the area surrounding Holden Village and Holden Mine will be withdrawn from mineral entry, just like the wilderness is just above us.
I assume it's very complicated relationships, and that it's going to cost millions, tens of millions of dollars to do all this work. URS works with a mining company. Your job is to minimize costs for any remediation, I assume, or one of the goals is, because you're working for the mining company. Can you describe the relationships between the government, URS, or maybe with the mining company then and URS, and how all that's working together, and I assume going toward a common goal?
You may want to talk to both of us, but I think the relationship is the projects I've worked on, it's a very good relationship between the agencies are working well together, and we're working well with Intalco and the consultant. We seem to respect each other's work and their opinions,
and we're just working fairly effectively at this point in time, and I don't see that it would change. Yeah. The agency's objectives perhaps are a little different than the company's in that we're not as cost conscious as the company might be. I mean, obviously their objective is to make profits for their stockholders, and while they're also very interested in the environment and cleaning this site up, it is a little different, but the objectives of the cleanup action, and we have a number, but basically are to clean up the site to the standards, the federal and state water quality standards and other environmental laws. As a part of the process, when we start evaluating alternatives, one of the factors or criteria that's considered in that process is cost. So we want to have a cost effective. The agencies are also looking at cost efficiency, but maybe not exactly like the company would be.
Can you describe the process of bringing the parties to the table? I mean, you said it was Superfund.
It was Superfund. We found out through some litigation in Idaho that we found out who the successor to Howe Sound Mining Company was, and then we formally notified them through our attorneys that Howe Sound operated here, and through a kind of a document, we notified them that they were a potentially responsible party at this site, and that kind of started the ball rolling. I think that was sometime in 1995 or early 96 when we made the first contact, and Alumet, now in Talco, came to the negotiations voluntarily, and actually voluntarily agreed to do the study. And it still took a while to negotiate the administrative order that is directing the cleanup action. But in good faith, Intalco started the environmental work, the remedial investigation, all of the field studies, almost a full year before we ever finalized the agreement, which I've never been on a site where that's happened before. So that's really shows, I think, how well the agencies and the company are working together.
What do we know about the chemicals that are actually entering Roa Creek and the concentrations, and is a risk assessment being done?
Yeah, a risk assessment has been done on the metal concentrations that are in Railroad Creek, and the conclusions of that have been that there is no immediate risk to human health. However, there is a risk to aquatic life, specifically, among other things, they call them benthic invertebrates. It's the bugs and larvae that live at the bottom of the creek bed. Those communities have been impacted by the various aspects of the mine, and because of that, there's not a lot of food for fish to eat. There's not a lot of fish in the creek, in this stretch of creek that you see right in front of the mine and mine tailings.
So by immediate threat, I assume you mean no like short-term exposure. What about long-term exposure?
No, as long as, I believe, and I actually was not involved in that part of the project, but I believe they found no threat to human health in that risk assessment. The work that the Forest Service did has significantly reduced exposure to the village to dust blowing off the tailings. But again, I might have to defer to Norm. I'm not sure if they found what they concluded in that study with airborne.
Yeah, you can find the tailings. You know, when the wind blew up and down the valley, the dust went quite a ways. From the village, and you can find tailings out into the forest around the site from the blowing, but there's been no indication that this had a detrimental effect on the vegetation anyway.
Or human health.
Yeah. Obviously the dust would irritate your lungs and your eyes when it was blowing, and that's one of the big advantages of putting the gravel on.
Question back here.
Specifically, what heavy metals are coming out of the mine? What heavy metals are present in the tailings? What chemicals are there?
Coming out of the portal drainage, the predominant metals that we're concerned with include, and correct me if I miss anything on the spot, cadmium, copper, zinc, and iron.
Did you say copper?
Yeah, cadmium, copper, zinc, and iron. Out of the tails themselves, the highest concentrations of metals we're seeing coming out of the tailings is iron itself, with some small lower concentrations of the metals that I mentioned for the portal drainage.
And the water is a little more acidic and it seeps from the tailings than it is from the mine. And it's too bad one of our geochemists wasn't here. They really get excited about the geochemistry that's going on inside the mine and under the tailings piles. But
yeah, the drainage from the portal itself is slightly acidic. The pH ranges from about 4 to about 7. In some of the seeps, the groundwater that you can actually see kind of coming out the sides of the tailings piles close to the creek, the pH is quite a bit lower. However, we haven't seen an impact on the pH in Railroad Creek itself. The Railroad Creek pH has remained pretty stable.
Dilution there.
Yeah, a lot of dilution.
Probably notice also the strong iron staining down along the Railroad Creek, and in places the stream gravels have actually been cemented by the iron, so it almost looks like concrete, which also has harmed the aquatic life as well.
Is there water coming out of the mine in other places other than the 1,500 foot?
Not that we know of for certain. There is one seep that enters Railroad Creek further upstream from the portal drainage, that there is some speculation as to where that seep is coming from. And that hasn't been concluded yet, but it is possible that that's coming from the mine itself, or it could be runoff from some of the upper adits and portals that have been drilled above the portal. But there's no large quantities of water that we've found that enter Railroad Creek from the mine.
There's a little drainage that's seasonal out of the 1100 adit, but it flows into that one avalanche chute that probably comes out in the mine or in one of the other seeps.
Right, that's
Dames and Moore, sorry, I can't.
That's all right.
URS did some dye tests back in, I think, 97 or 98 to try to find out where some of the water is going, coming down one of the avalanche chutes, and they never found the dye, so we're not sure what happened, or maybe they just didn't stay long enough monitoring it. But we hoped it was going to show us something.
Yeah, the results of that were inconclusive.
Yeah. Somebody here, and then you.
I was just wondering, as far as water's getting into the mine, and the mine water level is at least up to the portal, naturally, where would it be going? So
it would be, if there was no mine there, you would see water that enters the groundwater system underneath that portion of the mountain. Water comes in through precipitation and infiltration into the ground surface, and it also comes in as, you know, groundwater flow, which is deeper, lower within the mountainside, that flows toward the valley. This Railroad Creek Valley is a drainage for, you know, both sides. You have drainage coming down from the various mountainsides and glacier melt and precipitation. And it would be the same as it is on the other side of the creek, where water's just coming in as groundwater or a stream like Copper Creek.
Well, then the water that's come in there now, unless you somehow retard the source, won't it end up somewhere in groundwater if it doesn't come out the portal?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not looking at plugging the mine and just letting the water flow out somewhere else. We would be looking at bulkheading that portal so that we could control the flow out of the mine, because right now the flow varies throughout the season. In the spring, the flow rate out of the mine is around roughly 900 gallons per minute. It varies. And in the summer and fall, it drops down to about 200 gallons per minute. So one of the things we'll be looking at during this study is seeing if we could put a bulkhead, and this may not be the final remedy, but it's just an option that we'll be looking at, is putting a bulkhead in that portal with a valve and a pipe coming out that we could regulate the flow so the flow stays relatively constant throughout the year instead of these wild swings, just for treatment purposes, so that we can correctly meter, you know, some pH adjusting chemicals or whatever we want to do to that water throughout the year.
Well, you're kind of backing into my question, but after all the dynamic and everything that's gone on here, how do you know you're done? And who's going to tell you are?
Well, you're never done. I guess whatever measure is implemented at this site, monitoring will continue for quite a while afterwards. And Intelco won't be able to just walk away from the site once the remedy is selected.
Over here.
Yes, how much contamination of this pollution goes into Lake Chelan, and how does it affect the lake?
Well, we're still doing some sampling on the sediments in Lake Chelan, which is the, you know, the soils and rock that are right at the mouth of Railroad Creek. The delta. And so we've recently done some additional sampling up there. But it does look like some of the sediments in the immediate area of Railroad Creek have high concentrations of some of these metals that are coming out of the portal. And that could be for several reasons. Tailings material washing down historically into the creek. A lot of historical reasons that we're not sure of. But it does appear that there are some elevated metals concentrations in that sediment due to Lake Chelan's size and depth. The impacts of that are still kind of being evaluated.
It appears that, it's uncertain right now whether there's any effect on the biological community, mm-hmm. There probably isn't, but it's still uncertain.
Yeah, it's still being evaluated.
Yeah.
You showed, Jay, the picture, a stone crusher, which was operating from the mine.
Oh, from the mill.
Yeah, from the mill. By what was that powered?
That was electric. I assume most everything in the mill was electric. They had power into Holden Village when it was an operating mine. There was a power line from Chelan. Mm-hmm.
So all was electric.
Mm-hmm. It was quite interesting. Milling operations. Too bad the museum is not open right now, but you could get a feel for how the ore was.
That was up there.
Yeah. Okay. Before it was. Okay.
How for Atlas? How is the progress coming in the first week? And how are you according to the schedule that you had set? Like, what do you see happening in the next couple weeks?
Well, we just started construction yesterday, so Wednesday, and this whole process, we've estimated that without knowing what conditions we'd see once we started getting underground, we've estimated it would take until mid-September to finish up so that we could actually assess the safety of the tunnels and plan an underground investigation. So it's a little early to tell how the schedule's going to go without really being able to kind of have x-ray vision into the underground portion of that tunnel.
Tom?
Is the source of the pollution the tailings that are put back into the mine, or is the source of the pollution the runoff from the mine stopes and metals that are in there?
Well, I think likely it's a combination of processes underground. Without being able to go down and sample the tails that were backfilled, he's referring to is during operations as they were mining, like I had said previously, they mined below the level that we're working at and above. And in order to try to maintain the stability of some of these areas as they were working underneath them, around them, they backfilled some of these big open areas with tailings material. And so that could likely have an impact on the water quality that we see coming out of the mine.
You cannot put the tailings back in the mine shafts, right?
Well, it's an option that's been looked at, but we haven't finished developing all the remedial alternatives yet. We're just beginning that part of the project. This investigation is actually kind of the first part of that evaluation of different alternatives, and even we haven't even developed the alternatives yet.
Even if we were to do something like that, you couldn't get all the tailings back in.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
I guess that was my question on the tailings along the river. Is there discussion of contouring them or doing something with them?
Those slopes will probably be cut back for stability reasons.
And how would that, you think that would stir up lots of bad things?
It would stir up there would be a short-term impact to that, most definitely.
Up here.
Will you be working constantly until mid-September, and how will that affect our access to the third level and the museum and stuff like that?
Well, what we're hoping right now, Atlas Bossett, the mining contractor, is going to be working initially, anyway, from Wednesday to Wednesday. And then they'll take 6 days off, they'll come back to the site on Tuesday night, and then they'll work again from Wednesday to Wednesday. Right now, they're doing some work to try to improve the drainage ditches down to the settling pond so that we can actually run the volume of water we'd like to run down to the pond through those ditches, kind of increase the capacity. So they're running a backhoe along the road to do some earthwork. So it's not very safe for people to walk up on that road from the vehicle bridge all the way up to the third level. But once they're done with that work, that road will be reopened up to the portal museum. And then it'll stay open until we again need to run water down that ditch and start sampling activities, where there'll be a lot of traffic on that road to make it unsafe again for people to kind of walk around. So it'll kind of be intermittent, I guess.
So
long answer to your question.
So they're not working, we will be able to go up?
Yeah, I think there'll be periods of time in the next couple months that road will be open and you'll be able to go up there.
Are there good maps of what the tunnels are?
There's some several. We were able to recover quite a few maps of the underground workings.
There's some of them up at the museum.
Yeah, there are.
In the resource center, in the remedial investigation.
Somebody over here?
Yes.
Is there a way to determine before you start moving things around how high the water really is in the back of the mine? Is there a possibility that you'll pop the cork, so to speak?
Well, that's why we'd like to try to come into that tunnel from behind that collapsed section, so that doesn't happen. We do know that the water level, we believe that the water level in that tunnel is less than about 20 to 30 feet, which is the difference in elevation between the main portal and the ventilator shaft to the mine, which is located around the hillside at an elevation that's slightly above the elevation of the portal. And there's no water coming out of that ventilation tunnel right now, and we believe that's because the water isn't backed up quite that high. So we feel we can safely come in from behind the collapsed section and access that pool of water. And from what we've seen, we've gone down, we're about 20 feet above the tunnel right now, and there's no evidence of water right now, although we don't know where we're at on the tunnel exactly. But yeah, we don't want to come in from the front, definitely for that reason.
Do these guys from Atlas Bossett, do they like do real mining, or do they just clean up after old mining?
Actually, most of the crew are miners who've done real mining through their careers.
I think most of them, mm-hmm. Didn't they come off of the, some of them were working on the Echo Bay gold mines up in by Republic?
Yes.
Yep.
So, and that's an active operation there.
Over here.
Yeah. What kind of, is there going to be a public comment period before decisions are made? What kind of opportunities for the public input?
Yeah, there'll be a public comment period on the feasibility study before a final alternative is selected.
Are you going to then put on scoping of the alternatives to make sure that the people are concerned about or interested in what they've looked at?
We have been meeting with the forest, with all the different agencies who are involved, the Forest Service and Ecology and the EPA, periodically for the past year or 2 years almost, as we're kind of stepping through the process. So what we've been trying to do is more work together as a group to try to develop alternatives and conclusions on the environmental impacts of the mine.
Is Holden involved
before we get too far?
We have been in some.
The CERCLA process that we go through is a little different than the NEPA. If you're familiar with the NEPA process, going through an EIS to a decision, there isn't an opportunity to appeal the record of decision in a CERCLA decision. You'd have to litigate it. But and we don't do quite as much public involvement as we do during the NEPA process, but we do have a community relations plan that we've developed, and we have certain key times when a certain product is produced that we will notify the public. We have a mailing list for people that are interested in getting on the Holden Mine cleanup mailing list. If somehow I get your names and addresses, I can see that you're added to it. We send out periodic news updates on the status of the project. At key times, we have been making documents available, or we will be making them available to the public to come in and look at them if they wish. When we get a final remedial investigation report, the public can come in and look at it, and the same with the final feasibility studies. When we conclude the feasibility study, we will then go out to the public with a formal document called the proposed plan, which will outline the preferred remedy that the agencies, at that point in time, once the feasibility study and the RI investigation are complete, then the agencies will prepare the proposed plan based on the data that Intalco and their consultants have developed. That proposed plan goes public, and there's a comment period, and we will have a formal public hearing where we will take we'll actually record it, and people can write in comments, and then those comments will help the agencies then prepare the record of decision on the final decision on the remedy.
Second row, there was someone.
Can you comment on how successful you've been with your tree planting on top of the tailings?
Very successful, and I it's too bad George Shear isn't here, who works for the Forestry Sciences Lab, that could go on and on about the successes there, but it's been very successful. The gravel has really facilitated, just the gravel by itself has facilitated the revegetation, and then some areas, as you may recall from the early shots of in the video, looking on the tailings piles, you can see some areas where there was more vegetation. And those were vegetation islands that were established with more soil and more dead woody material to help get vegetation started. And we're starting to see a lot of regeneration of trees and shrubs that we didn't plant that have come in naturally. So it doesn't look like it did before mining yet, but in one day it will.
I have a question. Has anybody any idea how much gold is in this? In those hills?
Nope. No. We know gold was a byproduct of the mining operation, and generally in the type of flotation process they used, it wasn't as terribly efficient as removing the gold as it was the copper and zinc, so there is some gold in the tailings. But as Jennifer was saying, it's not economical at today's prices.
So nobody knows what's there. No.
Well, I mean, we do have assays from what mineralized rock is left in the mine, and they assay for gold as well as copper and zinc. So there's
Some of the articles up at the museum actually addressed that. There was a little article that said there was like $1 million or a couple million dollars worth of gold in the tailings.
That's not bad.
Well, it's not bad if it costs $8 million to recover it, though.
Yeah. Some studies have been like $40 million. $40 million.
You know, you need some gold for some things. It doesn't matter what it costs. You need for instruments and for medical.
Well, we have a lot of gold mines that are profitable right now without having to get into it.
Colorado.
Well, Nevada. Well, even right here in Washington, over the Republic area.
Okay, we've been going for an hour now. If any of you'd like to stay and talk a little bit longer, I think they'll stay a little bit longer. And those of you that some of you are drifting off, feel free to do that. And we'll continue for a few more minutes. There was a question in the back row here.
Yeah, just, is the Holden Company funding all of it? Is there any federal participation on the paying for this? Or how is that structured?
Intelco, the successor to House Sound, is paying for all the studies and oversight costs and all the work that's being done up there right now.
And the remedial action that takes place, that's being negotiated then?
That will be Intelco's responsibility as well.
Yeah.
Can you get through with your whole decision-making process? Who makes the final call? Do all the cooperating agencies sign off on the final plan of action then? Or is it the Forest Service, the EPA, or how does that process?
We'll make the decision together as the agencies, even though the Forest Service is the lead agency. You know, right now we're working so well together, I can't imagine that we'd ever start bickering among one another, but it will be, even though we're the lead agency, it will be a joint decision from the agencies.
I have a question. How will the remedial action affect Holden Village, particularly our infrastructure in the south side of Railroad Creek?
Well.
It's
obviously it's a possibility, well, more than a possibility. We know there's going to be some disruption of the facilities over there during construction. And how significant that disruption will be and how it will involve your facilities over there, like your wood yard and your maintenance building and parking areas is uncertain at this point in time until we get a lot farther into the process and know what some of the alternatives are. But you know, we know there'll be disruptions of your water line, and there may even be some temporary disruptions of your water for your power generation. You know, there's ways we can work around that to minimize it, but there's likely to be some. There'll be more traffic on the road. I don't know, maybe Jennifer or Dick can address it. You know, taking
really
one of these things into
yeah.
construction is so hard. Whether you can phase it so that there's little impact, it's...
Yeah, it'll depend a lot on what alternative is selected, really. And since we haven't even formally developed any alternatives, it's kind of hard to answer that question. I think Intelco would like to disrupt the Holden Village as little as they possibly can.
But will that be a part of the things you look at and scope?
Yeah, that's definitely something that'll be looked at.
Where will these public hearings be held?
Well, we haven't determined yet, but Wenatchee for sure. And I guess when we, depending on what kind of public comment we get to the proposed plan, maybe, well, we'd have to have the hearings before the comment period ends. You know, if there's enough interest, we might have one like in Yakima, maybe Chelan. I don't know that we'd go all the way over to the west side for a public meeting, but.
How about the village?
Well, the village, yes. Actually, I'm sorry, I should have thought about that. Well, probably be some kind of meeting up here.
Okay, this person here.
Is this in any way a Superfund site? Is there any involvement with the Superfund?
Well, the Superfund kind of refers to sites where there's no responsible party that can contribute money to toward the
cleanup. Well, the reason I ask that question is because the Sarco Mining has a fund in Everett that Asarco is responsible for, but that is also it was my understanding that it also was a Superfund site, and it is very slow in having a resolution to the situation. They've removed houses and they've done some things that have been sitting unfinished for many years.
It's a little confusing. We're doing this under CERCLA, which is often referred to as a Superfund Act, but we're not using the Superfund to pay for anything, and it's not, this site is not on the national priorities list, which is the worst of the worst types of sites, unlike the uranium mine project I'm working on, which is a national priorities list site.
Well, I'm
so this is a CERCLA site, or a Superfund site. It's
not a Superfund site, but it is being remediated under CERCLA, which is
so
kind of, it is confusing.
The other one that I'm familiar with, which is in a SARCO site, and SARCO is, you know, a viable company, and it is not, has never been resolved. I mean, it's still...
That could be for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes the litigation process is really convoluted, and the responsibility for different impacts can't be pinned down, or it hasn't been litigated fully to put a SARCO as a responsible
party. Would any of those factors deal here?
Intelco has entered into this as a voluntarily, so they're not right now. They're operating.
SARCO did it also.
Well, at this point, Intelco's been paying the bills. I guess they're planning on following this all the way through to completion. You know, that what happens in the future, I guess, is definitely, I couldn't say for sure, but right now that isn't anticipated.
Yeah, there's sometimes when you get into those national priority list sites, you really do get some politics involved, and sometimes if you have multiple PRP, potentially responsible companies, that sometimes they may bicker among each other too, and that slows the process down.
Up here?
Two questions. Is there a website where we can monitor this stuff in terms of your schedule, documents that are developed, hearings, that kind of thing?
The Forest Service has our Wenatchee National Forest webpage has a little bit of information on it, and I believe the Washington Department of Ecology's website has some information on it, but I know the Forest Service site doesn't have any of the documents on our webpage.
Okay, the second question I have is, what are the kinds of watchdog organizations that will be, you know, sort of third party monitoring and, you know, advocates for overseeing or, you know, concerned citizens sort of thing? Are there any?
Right now, actually, the Forest Service does have a consultant that works for the Forest Service that does provide independent review of our work, anyway. But right now, I personally haven't had a lot of contact with any non-governmental type organizations that have been watching our work or reviewing it and providing input, but we're not really at that stage yet either. We do provide Holden Village also with copies of the documents that are produced.
They're available in the resource.
And yeah, they are here and to look at.
Tom?
Intelco is that the name of the company? Now, I'm just trying to figure out, it sounds as though Holden Village, the nonprofit camp or village, has no sort of responsibility for the mine. Am I reading that right?
No. Holden Village is a potentially responsible party as well.
It's a deep pocket sort of thing?
No, they're not a deep pocket.
Yeah, it's because...
Or are you?
We don't even have pockets.
Because Holden Village is a nonprofit, you know, and Intelco is voluntarily moving into this process as the sole PRP.
And the agencies have been in the process of negotiating a consent decree with Holden Village that would basically a non-monetary type settlement. But that's only just started, and it's kind of on hold right now until we know a little bit more what the final remedy might be.
So Holden might be responsible, the village might be responsible for monitoring and those sorts of...
Providing some...
Coffee.
Yeah, they've already, already have supported us a ton in this effort, just a lot of little things that we always forget.
Janet, do you want to add something?
I was just going to respond exactly that same way that most of the people are talking about, the in-kind sort of services, storage, staffing. And as Christopher started out in the beginning, we really do feel like partners in this process, and we want to all share in the stewardship of this.
Yeah, the village has been very
good. Why is Holden Village actually a PRP?
Well, one...
They bought the property.
Yeah, they're a property owner, for one. They own the site. And they have done some things, even somewhat minor, that have contributed to the release of hazardous materials.
What have they done? I mean, just up there where they stored
things
and stuff?
One of the instances when there was they were using part of tailings pile one as their septic or their drain field, and there was a failure, and some of the tailings went into Railroad Creek.
Yeah.
Does Holden still hold the mining claim for this area, the mines here?
Well, they weren't buying or mining.
The unpatented mining claim, just my understanding that all the unpatented mining claims have been abandoned now. And the area has been segregated from mineral entry, so we don't have to worry about a third party coming in here and trying to extort the either Holden Village or the federal government by the mile or something like that.
So there's no active mining claims?
No.
Yeah.
I know that part of the team that was interested in looking at the conditions in the mine this week was a team of wildlife biologists looking at some conditions in the mine, potential habitat for bats. Do you have any comments on what they were finding or what some of their recommendations might be?
Well, we were not able to document any current use of the mine by bats. And it's likely that we probably don't have much current use during the summer. There is a fairly significant potential for hibernation use of the interior portion of the mine by bats, but that's very hard to document. I mean, I think it's their basic assumption that it's occurring, but it's very hard, it'd be very hard to document. And for your kind of, I thought it was very interesting, we were measuring the air temperature coming out of one of the portals, and it was 41.2 degrees with over 90% humidity. So it was like more than air conditioning.
Yeah, it was cold.
Which is too cold for use by the bats during the summer active period. But it would be a fairly ideal temperature for hibernation.
Warms. Your video showed some timbers that I'm assuming are going into reconstructing or holding the portal open. Is there any talk about some more permanent structure other than wood to use in that area?
We're actually going to timber. The initial section of portal was steel timber sets.
There is some of the, I don't know if you noticed, but some of those were the... Those steel supports, there were a couple piles of that and then some timbers.
And the reason we're doing that is because we feel in that initial section of tunnel that has collapsed that the steel will hold up longer. However, as we enter deeper into the mine and the water quality is likely to be slightly more acidic, especially during certain times of the year, we're going to use wood timber sets because right now that's what's available and that's what people use in mines to support the tunnels from collapsing. And it's more resistant to corrosion, obviously, and stuff like that.
Is there any possibility that long-term public may have access in some limited way?
Very unlikely.
Very, very unlikely.
Can we get on the mailing app right now? Please paper sign on the mailing list.
How about if I just kind of pass this around and if anyone wants to get on the mailing list, where'd my pin go?
Yeah.
Are you going to videotape your exploration?
Yes. That was one of the things the agencies agreed to do to help facilitate the exchange of information and to kind of solve everybody's curiosity what's going on is to videotape the work that's going on on the surface and then also underground.
So would the Portal Museum then be able to have a copy of that for editing?
Yes, I
ever? Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Of virtual tours.
Hopefully by the time we get to a little more serious work, I'll be better at handling the camera, so.
I think you did a good job.
Is there any last questions before we finish up? Yeah.
Norm, in your comments, you used some terms that I guess I want to understand what you were talking about. Maybe I don't have them right here, but you talked about restoring some of the natural resources.
We are, as part of the cleanup, as part of doing the remedial investigation feasibility study, and Talco has also agreed to do some natural resource restoration studies. And generally, these two processes, although they're both in CERCLA, under the CERCLA Act, they generally take place at different times. You know, you'll either do the cleanup, the remedial investigation feasibility study, do a cleanup action, and then do a natural resource damage assessment and come up with some sort of restoration plan, or do it the other way around. And we were trying to be somewhat innovative this time and trying to combine both processes together. And Talco was really interested in having this be a very efficient process. And so they've agreed to do some of that natural resource assessment type work up front, part of the RI remedial investigation stuff.
What's your definition of natural resources, I guess?
We also have a group of trustees, and that what they call natural resource trustees, who try to supervise and that sort of work. And the natural resources would be like what effects you've had on the aquatic life. If you can assess what the impacts have been and then somehow quantify that damage, then there'll be an attempt to restore that habitat. And if for some reason we can't restore that habitat to 100% of what it was before the mine, then there's a possibility for some compensation that the trustees might receive. I think I summarized that as easy as I could, but.
Thank you. Curiosity, is the $70 million of product that was taken out of there, was that
yes.
1937 to $57, or yeah. Is that today's
dollar? I'm not sure what, if that was $57 or $62, but
Now, was that profit, or was that the gross amount?
I don't know.
Amount?
Maybe, Rick, to you?
No, it'd be probably gross.
So it's billions of dollars in today's dollars.
Oh, I don't know, it'd be billions.
It's a lot of money.
If you had 21 million gold back then and keep it at today's gold prices, it'd be a couple hundred million.
I wasn't clear on groundwater contamination. Have you looked at that, or is that part of the scope of this?
We have looked at groundwater contamination in the area. We're looking at it as a whole part of the system. I mean, groundwater in this area, it's a very narrow valley. So the actual space between the tailings piles and the creek is filled with the tailings piles. So that groundwater is flowing into the creek, and we're looking at it as an impact to the creek.
It's not like a big basin down below.
Right.
I've noticed since the last time I was here, there's more erosion along the road to the wilderness area. And as the water comes around the tailings piles, is there going to be any short-term, long-term mitigation of that situation?
Christopher, you have some fairly recent...
Yeah, well, the Forest Service has come up and looked at it. That would not be... something that Norm has been doing, but the district that has responsibility for this area. And it's not coming around a tailings pile up there, but it is a bend in the creek, which has been bulkheaded there in the past, and that those timbers have rotted and come out now just recently. And to redo that in the way in which it was done in the 30s would be tremendously expensive. And right now, the district is waiting to see, first of all, whether that road is necessary to be kept open at all, and second, what's really going to happen, what's the extent of the work necessary. So they're planning, they're just kind of waiting and watching right now.
They're planning to plan.
That's right.
Right now.
And that's all fill in there, and it's possible that during the cleanup they'll decide that they don't want that to road into the creek, perhaps, and then it will become a cleanup issue, but for this point it's not really looked that way. It's more of a trail access issue, and that can easily be diverted around behind through the miners' village. How about two more questions? Zero more questions.
Maybe none.
All right.
I just want to say thank you to the panelists for giving us information, because it's, you know, obviously we care a lot about this place and we appreciate your involvement and your stewardship of this.
Well, to add to that too, if you see, you know, Dick or I walking around, or the miners from Atlas Fawcett, who are easy to recognize because they have the hard hat on and are pretty dirty, feel free to ask us any questions you have, and we're happy to try to answer the best we can. And we appreciate all the support that we've gotten from the village, and love working here and love being up here too, so can appreciate it.
And at the same time, that they've all been very conscious of the village and our policies, and not interrupting any more than necessary. They've been a pleasure to work with also, so we appreciate that. And thank you, Dick.